Accession number 30,002, Mr. Eric Harrison, two. Now, we're talking about your time. Well, you've moved to Sunderland, and you're working still in at work time before at the Beg Mill. Now, tell me about your activities when you were in the Home Guard. I presume you joined in 1940, but you might have been in there.
Yes, I was in the Home Guard when we lived in Hartlepool, and when the war was declared in September 39, we probably moved to Sunderland in about, say, October 40. I don't remember those dates very well. I was in the Home Guard only in Hartlepool.
Tell me about Home Guard activities. Who formed it? What was it all about?
Well, we were put on the main road just outside Hartlepool, the Hartlepool road that was
Who formed it, though?
Oh, sorry, who formed?
Yeah, I mean, someone always has to form a thing,
Yeah.
Where was it based? Who was running it?
Well, I suppose it was an offshoot of the army, a local army, but I don't know that.
Where did you go to, though? Was it a drill hall or a scout hut or a...
No, we didn't do that. We used to have to go to a collecting point, and they would take us out to where they'd built on the road, that built these blocks where we interrogated people at night time, people in a car, and there weren't many cars, not like talking about now, but there were very, very few cars. But what we were really were looking for was an early warning was to give an early warning of an invasion, of people landing on the coast and doing what they had to do as invaders.
What uniform, weapons or equipment did you have?
Well, I'm afraid I was a Dad's Army man, really. Of those days, I had a wooden rifle. There was no ammunition in it. It was just a hoax, really, and
uniform?
I didn't have a uniform. We just had a band, which had on the LDV.
Well, that could have been earlier then, LDV.
Yeah, that was local defence volunteers, that's right. We just had LDV on it, and we were supervised by old sweats. People from the First World War had gone back had been asked to go back and do just what Corporal Jones does on Dad's Army, take us for a bit of drill if time was opportune. But basically speaking, we were just at these blocks on the road, making sure that people moving about at night time were legitimate.
So how would you stop the car then?
Well, we'd have to put the rifle up and stop him like that, halt.
What would you check? The papers, because they'd have the papers.
Well, we would just check that they were English and weren't German, I suppose. That's really what we were looking for.
Anything else you did with the LDV or the Home
No,
Guard?
I can't have been in it very long.
Now, what happens when you get to Sunderland? Anything else before you join up? Or you called I'm not sure. You'd be called
No, up. I would be called. I was called up.
Anything before we get to that then?
Before we get to that. No. I was just travelling... I was just travelling to work. I mean, I was working quite hard because there was a terrific call on.
It wasn't a reserved occupation, though, was it?
No, it wasn't a reserve, no.
So what happens then? When are you called up? Tell me about the call up.
Well, I was called up to report to this particular point.
Now, where was that?
In Hartlepool.
And what was the date? You have to go to Babbage
in June, right. Well, I was deferred for 6 months, so it would be round about, we'll say, October 40. I would And I was given 6 months deferment. Which
now, why were you deferred at first?
Because they couldn't train me. They hadn't the aeroplanes. They hadn't the opportunity to train us because of it was winter time. The training programs were all held up because of bad weather, and so that held up the training, and of course that was very bad. That was a bad deal.
And it's, there's no question of you being transferred to the army. You were the RAF were keeping you, but you were deferred for 6 months.
I was only deferred because they couldn't train me. They had neither the weather was on our side nor were the planes available. And eventually, I was called up because they could train me.
Now, tell us about the what was the actual procedure when you were called up? Was that June 1941 then, or just before?
Yeah, I went. I was sold a report to Babbacombe.
What happened when you were called up? I mean, was there any particular procedure, or was you just given a place to go?
No, I was just told to go to Babbacombe and to a reception centre there, and given my hotel room, and told that I would be there for, I think it would be 2 weeks, probably, was it?
So that this was an RAF reception centre, was it?
Yeah.
Was it crew, or air crew, or just
air crew, air crew.
Now, so what happened when you got to Babbacombe? It's always interesting, you know, you're a civilian, you've not done anything, a bit of LDB, but you're a civilian.
Yes, well...
When you got first arrived at Babbacombe in June 1941.
Yeah, right. Well, we were mainly disciplined. We were told what the service discipline was and how to conform to it. You know, we were marching up and down parade squares and going for long walks, and we were just told we weren't taught anything to do with flying directly. We were just talking about the formation of the RAF, who was the leading person in it, and you know, what the various ranks were right through.
When you got there, were you given a uniform?
Yes.
What do you remember about the what were they giving you?
Well, I was given, incidentally, as a if I'd been called up into the RAF, the ordinary jobs in the RAF, you know, like cooks and aircraftsmen and mending planes and things like that, I would have been an AC2, but because we were air crew, UT air crew, that means untrained air crew, we were LACs, which was leading aircraftsmen. So I wasn't ever an AC2 or an AC1. We went straight into the third rank up from the bottom, which was LAC, leading aircraftman. And because we were trainee air crew, we had a white flash on our hats. Do you remember that? No.
And what uniform did you get?
I just got the ordinary RAF uniform.
And what was that then?
Jacket and trousers and greatcoat.
Is that all?
And a hat, the peak forage cap.
Any other kit or equipment you were given?
Well, I would be given a gas mask, and I'd be given a tin helmet. And we would have to wear those at the appropriate times in training.
Now, how did you take to drill? They were drilling, I presume, were they? Drill.
Yes, it was
drill. How did you take to drill? Because you've never done it before. But some people like it, some people don't.
Well, most of it, just look forward to seeing the back of it, really. I mean,
did you see the point of it at the time?
Well, we didn't mind it. We didn't mind it, but... But we just accepted it. There was a war on, and that was the expression that was so commonly used at that time. You know, if you complained to people about this place is not very well lit or something like that, well, don't you know there's a war on? We have to economise in the use of whatever it happened to be. And we didn't grumble about what we had to do because there was a war on, and all we wanted to do was to do our best to get through the war and get back to civilian life.
Now, what other, so you did a bit of drill, what other training or did you do there?
I was only there a couple of weeks.
Is it? Yeah, June to July.
June to July, probably 6 weeks then. Yeah. No, that's all we really did there. We were taught a bit of first aid. We were taught things, you know, like what to do if somebody gets gassed, and it was always have a cup of hot sweet tea, various things like that, and we were taught, but mainly it was drill.
How did you get on with the other lads? You know, you were all recruits together.
I got on quite well with everybody who wasn't a Scotsman.
Why didn't you like the Scots?
They were awful.
In what way?
They were just argumentative and ready to fight, and I had some awful experiences.
In what way? Tell us about them. What was the bad?
Well, there would be about four or five of us in a room, and a room this size, and there'd be, you know, a bed there. Yeah, we'd get four in here comfortably. So you're having to live with three other people in what would have been a hotel bedroom. And so there would be about four of us, and I don't know, they just thought I was a snob, I think, really. I mean, I'd had a good upbringing by good people, my good parents, and wanted to conform, and they would just...
So what would they do?
Well, we did have a few fisticuffs, on a few occasions. I mean, I don't want to lay that on too thick, because... you know, we were all in the war together, but they weren't very, very friendly, and I tended to be cold-shouldered. I wasn't that happy, but not only that, but I was away from home, and most of us were homesick.
Now, what about the NCOs, the instructors? What do you think of them?
Well, they were regular RAF people. You know, who'd sort of been taken out of the job that they were doing, and like PTIs and people like that would be taken off RAF stations and sent down to the ITWs to...
Now, this is a reception centre, remember?
That was just a mistake in phraseology.
Yeah.
Sent to the reception centre to give us drill and physical exercise, of course.
Were they good, the instructors? I mean, you know, were they sympathetic or hard or what?
No, they were pretty. They were hard, they were tough but fair. I never had any problems in that respect. But there were no favourites. You know, they were tough, full time serving lads who. Probably could see a better future for themselves.
And what about the PT?
We did quite a lot of PT, which was hard work, really.
You must have been pretty fit with the rugby and the tennis.
Yeah, well, I suppose in a way I was. I don't remember it being taxing or a trial. I don't say that I enjoyed it. Everybody.
What sort of PT were you doing? Was it route marches or gym work?
No, we were doing physical, you know, this sort of business in the gym.
Swedish exercise.
Yeah.
Anything else?
You see, what you've got to remember is our attitude. And our attitude was that let's get this war over, let's get the job done, let's get started. And here we were, just being disciplined and having to do all this exercise and route marches and toughened up. And that was nothing to do with flying. We didn't know where we were going to go. We didn't know. We knew that we were going to ITW, but that wasn't the be-all and end-all of our training as pilots. So, well, as we were training as pilots, yeah.
And where was your next week? Your next week, we're not sure. I mean, how many weeks were there?
Well, the next move was to Paignton, wasn't it? That was ITW.
Before ITW, at Paignton. You went there in July.
Yeah.
You seemed to be there till August. Now, what was that like?
Well, we were getting on with the thing. We were learning about aircraft.
Now, what were you learning about aircraft?
Well, what the principle was, and we had to learn aircraft recognition, and that was a big subject.
Now, hang on. Now, those two things are very different, though. So, what were you learning about aircraft first?
Learning about aircraft. We were learning about engines and theory of flight was the correct terminology. Theory of flight, why an aeroplane flew, how it flew, and
so you spun off from that into engines and airframes.
Yeah, to do with.
And could you cope with that with your maths? You should have been able to do that.
Oh, I was okay. Yeah, I had no bother. I passed out well.
Now, what about aircraft recognition? How did they train you in that?
Well, they had lots of models and things as they would hang up in front of you, and using overhead equipment to photograph them on the walls, and we used to have to say what the aircraft was, and hand in papers at the end of the lectures.
Did you do it?
And yeah, fine. I was all red hot on it.
I guess you were interested in
aircraft. Yeah, I was interested in flying, and going back a bit, I used to buy the aeroplane every week and Flight with the two magazines that are still going today, and I used to buy those and read them from cover to cover, and read as much as was officially allowed to be published.
So you could recognise most aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what else were you learning at Paignton before ITW?
At Paignton ITW.
You got
theory. We were learning navigation.
So you were all
basic learning. Navigation.
Now, tell me about that. What were you learning?
We were learning the effect of winds on an aircraft and how you had to allow deflection, drift. Yeah, you've got the word for me. We're learning how to apply drift to your headings, and learning about swinging compasses, or the need for swinging compasses.
What's a swinging compass? Just explain for us.
Well, a swing compass was you would have to get it the compass because of. Putting a compass into an aircraft, the compass was magnetic and it was affected by anything, that was metal. And so all aircraft had to have the compass swung probably every 3 months. And you would have to find out what the effect of the magnetism of the aircraft had on the compass, and then you would have to alter the magnets in the compass to counteract that. I mean, if there was a 2 degrees west deviation, you would have to alter your magnetism in the compass to counteract the 2 degrees west by going 2 degrees east, and so we had to learn things like that, how to calculate your course for the track that you had to fly. We were doing basic navigation with maps, and
now you weren't being trained as a navigator this time. You were just being trained as air crew. Is that right?
No, training as pilots.
As pilots. So
yeah.
This is all part of it.
No, I was called in as a pilot.
Yeah. So this is just the navigation they gave everybody.
Well, a pilot has to know navigation. And there was a lot of map reading involved in that, by the way, which fighter pilots, you see, fighter pilot couldn't calculate his course and things like that, but like we could, as navigators, so they were learning map reading.
Anything else you were doing there?
Well, there was astronomy, basic astronomy.
So that's which part of the navigation, really.
That was part of the navigation, yeah.
Again, no trouble for you with the maps of these things?
No, I hadn't any bother, no.
Anything else you were doing there? Still doing a PT in the drill?
Yeah, we were doing all that, and yeah, that was about 6 weeks, I think.
Looks like it took till August. And then you seemed to go to Wilmslow in August 41.
But I only went to Wilmslow for a few days, probably.
It looks like it.
Waiting for a ship to America, to Canada.
Well, tell me the whole story about how you come to go there. What happened?
Well, because of the adverse flying conditions in this country, the government set up what was known as the Commonwealth Air Training Scheme. There was an additional scheme, which was the one that I went on, which was called the Arnold Scheme. That was named after General Arnold, who would have been a general in the American Air Force, which was under the Army. The American Air Force at that time hadn't been formed. The flying, service flying, was done by the U.S. Army Air Corps. It still had Army in it. And so General Arnold would have been an Army pilot. This government applied to the American government to offer the facilities for training pilots. And because America was anti-war, and there was a lot of it from the Americans in the early days, because they were anti-war, they turned it down. So General Arnold said he would do it, and he made a contract with the British government to train 3,000 pilots in various stations that he set up in America, in the southern states of America, places like Texas and Houston and Camden, Carolina, where I went to. He was going to train 3,000 people on private aerodromes. Now, going into America at that time, because America weren't in the war, they hadn't had Pearl Harbor until the December of 41, and I was there in the July and August, probably. I don't know if it was July or August.
You went out in August, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was there as a civilian. So we were all kitted out in civilian clothing.
Now, hang on, when did this start? Where were you kitted out in civilian clothing?
Hmm?
Where were you kitted out in civilian clothing?
Camden, South Carolina.
Let's step back a bit more. So that was a scheme that was going to go on.
Yeah.
When did you first hear about it?
When I was at ITW.
So back at Paignton.
Paignton, yeah.
Now, so you were selected. Was everybody going on the scheme, or were you selected for it?
Yes, they were all going on the Arnold. They were all going on the Arnold scheme, but they didn't all go on Arnold schemes that were at that ITW. It was that my particular course, what say 40 of us, were told we were going on the Arnold scheme. the next course into ITW painting could have been nominated to go to the Commonwealth Training Scheme. We had the two schemes going, and I was selected to go on the Arnold scheme.
So and, what happened then?
And well, to get there, I went to we went by. Does it say what the name of the vessel is?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't matter. So
we went by liner from Glasgow to Halifax. From Halifax, Nova.
What was the trip like? That's quite a trip.
Awful.
In what way?
Well, I was on G deck, and you know how many decks there are above deck level, main deck level. There's the first promenade deck, there's the second promenade, and I was on G deck, and just behind my head was the side of the ship, of the boat, the iron of the boat. The boat, you know, came like that, and I was that low down that I could touch the iron that side and the iron that side, and I slept in a hammock. We had hammocks slung up, and in that G deck there must have been 100 of us. And it was an absolute, utter disgrace. And not only that, but our lives were on the line, but there was a war on, and everybody's life was on the line. Some more than others, that's what it amounted to. I mean, if you weren't in the services, you were subject to bombings.
So what about that? So what was it like in a hammock then? How did you take the hammock?
Well, it was just awful. I remember writing a letter home to my wife and to tell her what was going on, and she said that she never got the letter. She got about a quarter of it, and it had all been censored and it had been cut out. The fact that I was on G deck, she didn't know about, nor did she need to know for that matter, which is why they cut it out. And we had, you know, the food we were all crammed in, and on that boat, I don't know how many people there were, but there might have been 1,500 of us. And normally it wouldn't even carry passengers.
So what was the food like?
Well, the only good thing that I remember about the food was that the boat had come from South Africa, no doubt bringing troops back or bringing troops over, and then it had gone from South Africa to Halifax. So it had taken on board victuals in South Africa, which of course were good quality, and I the only thing that I really can remember about that is that when the shop used to open on board the boat, we all used to buy South African Cadbury's chocolate, which was better than the Cadbury's chocolate is today, but you couldn't get that in England because it was rationed, and so we you know, we had plenty of chocolate and things like that, sweets and...
Now, what about seasickness? I mean, were you seasick?
I was seasick before I left the Clyde. There's coming out of Glasgow, there's an island called Ailsa Craig, and I always remember that I was sick, and as I was being sick over the side, I saw the island, and I said, you know, where's that? Is that Ireland? And they said, it's Ailsa Craig. I said, well, that's in the Clyde. And they said, well, we aren't out the river yet. And I was sick all the way over, yeah. And I still am today. And
so you had an awful... There was no method of stopping it then for you?
No. You couldn't go to the doctors or anything. There were doctors on board, but...
Now, were you sailing on your own? Was it a single ship, or was it in a convoy?
We were in convoy. I would have thought the middle of the Atlantic. We wouldn't be in convoy, but we were picked up as we went down the Clyde, and had a couple of destroyers with us. So. Who left us after, we'll say, 2 days out. We'd sailed 2 days without a convoy, and because we were out of the range of the U-boats at that time. But, of course, eventually the U-boats became bigger and bigger, and and could cover, yeah, could cover.